There is a code that wise people live by. They try to live to a standard of some sort, and unwise people don't.
Not to plug what we're doing, but we're doing this because morally we want to leave a better world. We're living proof of the point you just made, that with wisdom, it has to be rooted in morality.
I could not agree more with that comment. And indeed, that is the fundamental motivation for us doing this. The reason why we pursue wisdom is because we're thirsty for meaning. We're thirsty for doing something that is right. And the difference between an intelligent person and a wise person, I think, is exactly that. The intelligent person can certainly grapple with the world to get the outcomes that they want, but a wise person gets the outcome that it should be. The pursuit for wisdom at the same time is a pursuit for what's ultimately right, ultimately what's moral. Hello and welcome to 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn Wisdom for the Next Generation. This is a special episode where the four hosts of this show, Dr. Duff Watkins, Siba Vanderzee, Robert Hosry, and me, Jeffrey Wang, we want to explore the age-old question, what is wisdom? So Dr. Duff Watkins is our resident former psychotherapist who also doubles as a executive search consultant currently holidaying in Brazil.
Siba, yeah, fucking holiday. I'm stranded in Brazil. I can't go home.
Stranded in Brazil. Okay. And we have Siba Vanderzee, who is an executive search guru, our Dutchman in the desert, who currently has an NBA team in the Western Conference Finals, the Phoenix Suns, one of my favorite. And Robert Hosry, our producer with the radio voice and a wicked sense of humor, and myself, Jeffrey Wang, I'm the founder of the Professional Development Forum. Now, you think that when we embarked upon this podcast, we come to an agreement as to what constitutes wisdom, but we shoot from the hip and plow straight into it, only coming to realize that we each have a slightly different idea as to what wisdom is. Now, I believe the different perspectives each of us bring to this podcast brings it the unique richness that it has. And I, for one, have learned so much from my other esteemed co-hosts. Now, today, I want to delve deeper into this concept of wisdom. What constitutes wisdom and how do we find it? According to the dictionary definition of wisdom in Wikipedia, as you go to, of all places, wisdom is the ability to think and act using knowledge, experience, understanding, common sense, and insight. Charles Spurgeon defined wisdom as the right use of knowledge. And this one I really like, the ability to foresee the consequences of your action. In other words, wisdom allows you to better grapple with the world. And this one I like as well. Meacham in a study says, wisdom is a capacity to have the foreknowledge of something, to know the consequences, both positive and negative, of all the available courses of action, and to yield or take the options with the most advantage either for present or future implication.
I think he's wrong.
You think he's wrong? Okay.
I think he's wrong.
The reason I read you all that is just so that I can go around and see what your take on what wisdom actually is. Now,
we've been debating what is wisdom ever since we started this podcast. We have four principles here, so we have four different views, but we're not the only ones. I mean, there is actually a substantial body of research dedicated to defining wisdom, which I didn't know. One of our upcoming guests on the show, speaking of psychiatrists, he is a psychiatrist, Dr. Dilip Jest, who wrote a book, it's a very recent book called Wiser. And as a psychiatrist, he's studying what is wisdom and can you get it? The answer is yes. And can you get it faster? Again, the answer is yes. And his whole book is dedicated to that. But he put down a few criteria about what wisdom is. So let me share with you some of the things that he came up with. Well, let me tell you what wisdom is not. Let's start with that. It's not intelligence. It's not being smart. That's not enough. It's not being well educated. It certainly isn't being old. You can be old and be very, very unwise. Question is, can you be young and wise? No, you cannot be. You need age. You need this experience that comes with age to be wise. I'll just stop there. Does that ring a bell with any of you guys?
Well, one of the items that I was thinking of when it comes to wisdom, Dove, is wisdom resists the attempts of our intellect to define it. I thought that was an interesting start to this conversation, because if we think we can define wisdom, maybe not.
Are you saying that the attempt to define wisdom is folly?
No, it's just that it's wisdom is evolving. It depends on the situation. It could be based on cultural differences. I don't think there is an ultimate definition of wisdom because it evolves and it can change over time. There is something about it that we all have, human beings, a need to understand things better and to have a purpose in life. And to a certain extent, I think wisdom is a like a fulfillment of nourishing our inner longing for deeper meaning and purpose. How is that for the conversation?
That's pretty good, Siva. So I'm impressed with that. I don't really have anything to add. If you want my take, wisdom is nothing without compassion. I suppose a spirituality that goes with the individual that wants to do what we're doing, share it. What is the point of wisdom? That's what I look at. What is the point of wisdom if not to share? As Andrew Tyndale said, not to pay the stupid tax for the next generation.
You touched on a very good point there, Robin. Also, there's a little bit to unpack there. So I like what Siba said, and that calls into the age-old question whether wisdom is universal. So are there, you know, being an international podcast, you realize that this thing could cover a whole swath of population that lives in very, very different realities, if it lives in very different cultures, completely different life experiences. But is wisdom shared across these different life experiences? Are there universal truths that we can speak of?
Yeah, definitely, because you know it when you see it. I mean, I can give you some American examples, like Benjamin Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, George Washington. These are considered wise people in the American. But to use references with which Rob will be familiar, Obi-Wan, Kenobi, Gandalf the Grey, people in his world, they're
you
all,
see,
as soon as you,
yeah, but both Obi-Wan them, and Gandalf wise. Were not wise in their youth.
Didn't say they were, but I just said they're wise people and you recognize them. Same with Yoda. I mean, you know, these are wise beings. And when you see them, you recognize, okay, so how do you recognize it? What is the basis by which you recognize wisdom?
That's a good point. In traditional Western society, I suppose in traditional society, both Western and Eastern, it is age. But we've just said that you can be old and not wise. And we all know very old, unwise people. But you, Duff, said that you can't be wise and young. But if wisdom is experience and you're young and you absorb that experience, do you absorb that wisdom as well?
No, it's not just experience. Experience is a necessary ingredient. Let me tell you some of the ingredients I came up with from research. Okay, to be wise, you have to have rich factual knowledge. You got to know stuff, right? And you also have to have, you have to have, know the procedural knowledge, how to get things done, how to deal with life. So it can't just be something that you know, it's got to be something that you put into action. Then there's also, you have to have some sort of an understanding of life's context. Siba was talking about culture and things like that. And you're right, it's wise in a certain context. You have to understand the context in which things are occurring. Acknowledging that people have different values and different priorities than you is also part of wisdom. Acknowledging that people are different. And finally, understanding that knowing the limits of your own knowledge is a big part of wisdom, knowing that you don't know it all. How is that for a basis of wisdom?
I'm not sure if I completely agree that it is an age limit that suddenly you have to reach in order to be wise or to have that wisdom. I think some individuals learn very important lessons at a very young age. And there are perhaps a lot of people at more senior age where you can doubt the level of wisdom that they have gained. And I don't mean it in a disrespectful way, but it's not by definition age. One of the things I read about in preparation is wisdom is the store of knowledge that a society or culture has collected over a long period of time. And I ask myself the question, first of all, what is the definition of universal wisdom applicable in all cases, perhaps? And I think seeking wisdom is universal. I think most people are looking for wisdom over time. Wisdom itself, as we discussed a little bit ago, can evolve. And the substance of what wisdom is can evolve. If you look at science, what we have learned about our planet, where in the past it was, well, perhaps based on religion or other thought processes, now we are learning more. We still don't know everything, but we learn a lot of factual data. And we, as a society, decide that's the wisdom to base our thinking on. Not sure if this fits with what you just mentioned, Duff, but I find it difficult to put a timeline on it. It's really that individual and his or her experience.
So the problem is that we see the world through our own individual lens. Very few of us have been in other people's bodies, if any at all. And so how do you know that what you deem to be wisdom, what your life experiences and what's worked for you, how do you know that that's definitely going to work for somebody else? You know, case in point, you know, if somebody with a different appearance might experience the world a little bit differently. And so that, you know, what is considered as conventional wisdom for you may not work for somebody else. Are there things which are universal to all human beings? Do we all seek the same things? Now, I know we certainly want different things. That's why we have an economy and we're blessed with different gifts and all that. People can trade with each other. And some people want certain things more than each other. Some people want money. Some people want fame. Some people want family. Some people want fulfillment. Is there something that's universal to us all that is a piece of wisdom that ultimately applies to us all? Now, I don't think we'll ever be able to prove any of this because we'll never know from somebody else's perspective. But my belief is that there is a universal set of wisdom that we as human beings all share. And there are certain things that I think will be truth that people will uncover as they go. I think the ultimate goal for me used to be finding success, which may be the success in the conventional sense, where you're trying to find more money, more status, more power, more the traditional stuff. But I think as I get older, I realize that we are, as human beings, we seek fulfillment. And fulfillment comes into more of a sense of meaning, knowing that you have made a difference. Yeah, and I think this goes into what Rob was alluding to earlier in this point, that wisdom needs to speak to something much deeper. You know, it needs to speak to something more spiritual, something that constitutes virtue. So the question here is, what separates wisdom from, I suppose, intelligence is that intelligent people can make a lot of money, because they understand, they can observe the world, they understand how it operates. But wise people knows the difference between how to make money the right way so that you don't leave a trail of destruction behind you. Now, what do you say to that sort of concept?
I hear you. There's nothing that you said that I disagree with. I'm very hesitant to hang success on wisdom. You can be really wise and not successful.
Depends on how you define success, though, don't you think?
It depends on how you define success. And that's as elusive as how you define wisdom. But what we do here on 10 Lessons is we share lessons. I think, Siba, you interviewed this guest, Steve Zylstra. One of his lessons, which resounded because we all get this, is, yes, Dad was right. Now, think about that. I mean, that is the nub of wisdom. That is where wisdom starts in every family. Listen to your damn parents. Well, we're not going to do that because we're young. And it brings me to the mechanics of wisdom. And you all might disagree with this, but go with me on this. So it's a level of competencies. You start off with unconscious incompetence. You don't know what you don't know. Conscious competence, you know what you don't know. Oh, sorry, conscious incompetence, you know what you don't know. Conscious competence, you know what you know, and unconscious competence, you don't know what you know. And once you keep stepping through those, you start developing, evolving. And I believe that is where wisdom starts being formed. And that's where you start learning and understanding, as Duff said, or as Siba said, those processes that you need to adopt to get to the next level, to the point where they become innate, they become natural. But it's the spirituality behind it, the virtue behind the person, and that comes through self-awareness. So I think there's multiple conduits to get you to a state of wisdom?
Well, history and science support you because the people, like whether you go back to the ancient Stoic philosophers, I mentioned George Washington, Ben Franklin, Alexander Hamilton.
And don't forget Marcus Aurelius.
I'm just about to say Marcus Aurelius, every single one of them practiced wisdom. This goes back to your point, a point you made, Steve, I've been thinking about. Do most people want to be wise? Do most people care about being wise? I'm not so sure. I do know that you have to practice it. You have to pursue it, rehearse it, implement it in your life. Otherwise, you'll just be another dumbass, of which there are so many, of course. It's something that you really have to work at if you want to be wise. I guess that's what I'm saying is no one becomes wise by accident. You really have to think about it and ponder it and consider the implications.
I was looking at this a little bit earlier. Intelligence is commonly known or commonly associated with knowing something, knowledge. Wisdom is not only knowledge, but it's also understanding. And in a way, if you have intelligence, you can connect the dots over time, and then perhaps you create with that wisdom. There is a distinction between knowing and understanding, and that's what makes it interesting, right? The other thought in this conversation is, wisdom as a virtue for good, for better, for improvement. But what about smart people that use their knowledge, their understanding to do bad things, criminals? Or
are they wise, Siba?
That's the question, right? And I saw the term wisdom deprivation. So there is wisdom, but it's used for a negative outcome, as we would judge it.
Well, you're right. I mean, we'll use history. Napoleon, Hitler, Genghis Khan, Mao Zedong, those are smart guys. I mean, you might not like it, but they were smart guys. Do we consider them wise? No, we don't, because wisdom is intensely moral in its basis, in its essence, and intensely moral in the sense there is a code that wise people live by. And it's maybe they construct it or maybe they find it or share it. I don't know, but they try to live to a standard of some sort, and unwise people don't. Certainly the bad people we're talking about don't.
That is something I can get fully behind, Duff, not to plug what we're doing, but we're doing this because morally we want to leave a better world. We're living proof of the point you just made, that with wisdom, it has to be rooted in morality.
I could not agree more with that comment. And indeed, that is the fundamental motivation for us doing this. The reason why we pursue wisdom is because we're thirsty for meaning. We're thirsty for doing something that is right. And the difference between an intelligent person and a wise person, I think, is exactly that. The intelligent person can certainly grapple with the world to get the outcomes that they want, but a wise person gets the outcome that it should be, rather than just to their own desires. The pursuit for wisdom at the same time is a pursuit for what's ultimately right, ultimately what's moral.
Well, I just want to add to the mix here, because we were using names of philosophers. Socrates is of course one of them, talked about virtue is knowledge, and all living things aim for their perceived good. And therefore, if anyone does not what is good, he cannot do what is good. If someone knows what is good, he will do what is good because he will aim for what is good. This text came apparently from Socrates 400 before Christ, so I'm not sure how accurate it is, but it seems to fit with what we're discussing here.
So Socrates, I'm glad you brought up Socrates, because he was the wisest man in Athens, because he knew the limitations of what he didn't know. He asked questions all the time. He challenged the basis of the assumptions that the men of his time had. And for that, he drove everyone mad. But you touched on a very interesting concept there that I want to unpack a little bit, because I believe the prerequisite to gaining wisdom is the humility to know the limitations of what you know or what you hold to be true, and the humility to accept that what you might think you know, and this is why we ask that lesson, what have you unlearned that you've always held to be true in every episode? For a person to be wise, I believe the prerequisite is that you have the humility and the openness to be able to see alternative perspectives, facts, alternative opinions to be able to better understand the world and create a different model to see that. So how important is humility? And can a person achieve wisdom without humility?
Yeah, I think I totally disagree with the word humility. There's no such thing as humility. Nobody is humble. It's a conscious decision of, oh, I better act this way so that people think that I'm like this. Self-awareness is, to me anyway, the real humility. To be self-aware enough to know what you don't know. To be self-aware enough to know that you have been biased in a thought process or in a way you've treated someone and fix that. That, to me, is what humility is. For most people, humility is, oh, well, I'd better not big note myself. And I think that's false. That is absolute false.
I don't think that's humility. Can I just say, so much cynicism in one so young, Rob, is very disconcerting to somebody like me.
Anyway. Mate, my hair is as gray as yours.
Well, I think humility does exist. But yeah, I think if you don't have developed or achieved or acquired humility somehow, some sort of openness, they'll use the word openness to being corrected, then you got no hope of being wise, because this life just comes at you and corrects you with so much ongoing corrective feedback that if you're resisting it, you know, you're just...
But Duff, wouldn't you agree, Duff, that self-awareness is the most important part of all of this? Because if you're not self-aware, how the hell are you going to know that you're wrong, or how are you going to accept any of the new information coming at you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing. Self-awareness, to me, self-acceptance is where I like to start with people, but that's part of self-awareness too. Understanding what your biases, your prejudices, your dislikes, irrational, your non-rational aspects are, and just accepting them and just starting there with that. Then you can start the corrective action if you're so inclined, which, you know, maybe people are not.
I'd like to ask all of you, is there a lesson that you've heard so far from one of our speakers that really, really resonated with you personally? Now, my guess is it's going to be something that touched on a moral value that you hold very deeply yourself.
There's a lot of them, you know. One that just came to mind, though, when I was talking to Dr. Robert Lustig, one of his points of wisdom was, institutions don't love you back. Now, I knew that already. I mean, I'd had my own personal experience, but, you know, it's when you find that out for the first time, that employer, that university, that hospital, that organization to which you've developed and invested so much of yourself that you care about, they don't care for you. They don't love you back because it's an institution. When you realize that, that's a big moment in a person's life. And when he said that, that cast me back years ago to when I learned the lesson the hard way, that institutions don't love you back. And to me, it's an existential milestone, a maturation, when you realize that. And more importantly, when you stop expecting institutions to love you back.
I want to also say at this moment, we have had some pretty impressive guests. The one that stands out was from Jacob Butler, a Native American artist here in the United States. And he talked about, the greatest change I can affect is my own. And his story indeed was very powerful. He was, as a young man, he was angry. He didn't like people. He was, you know, rightly or wrongly, he was upset. And he came to the realization that's not the way to go through life. And that lesson is something that perhaps every person, I don't know, but many people go through, that you're on a certain track and we always think we are doing the right thing. We're saying the right things. We're doing the right things. And you come to a point that, oops, maybe that's not the right approach. Maybe I should have done it differently, or from here on, I'm going to approach things differently. I thought that was one of the lessons that I really liked.
Well, I will take up the whole conversation. I've got two. Look, what struck me and made me look inside to see, what have I done? How have I been challenged by this? One was Diana White with Listen for Empathy and Comprehension. As a sales professional, I listen for sales clues so I can answer the client and sell the next thing. That was how I got trained. But to listen for comprehension made me stop and think about how I communicate with people. That is good, because if I can understand what you're saying to me, if I can empathize with your point of view, then the world will be a little better. I mightn't agree with you, but I'll be able to see it from your perspective. I'm listening to you to listen to you, not to respond, not to find a solution. So I really like that. And the other one is pretty self-explanatory from Guillaume Lucci, which is leave the money, take the opportunity. I've done that several times in my career. And when I did that, when I left the money and took the opportunity, I started collecting adventures. It was wonderful. So I find those two lessons really insightful as far as developing my self-awareness and understanding of wisdom.
Well, for me, this is a lesson that, believe it or not, I've only realized in the last couple of years, and that is fill your heart with gratitude. For the longest time, I never understood why people pray before a meal. I never understood why we thank people for things that are always there. You know, electricity is always there, and, you know, things that you already have. Why are you thankful for them? What I didn't realize was that having gratitude changes the way you see the world. And it honestly, indeed, is the key to happiness, because you could have a lot of things, and when you don't feel gratitude for having it, it's almost like you don't have it. And it's such a psychological change in my mind once I realized the power of having gratitude in the quality of my life and the quality of how I see everything around me. I realize now that I'm so thankful for having such great people in my life. You know, whereas if I had met you 5 years ago, Duff, I probably would have taken you for granted.
We still do take him for granted.
A large deposit in a Swiss bank account in my name would go a long way for expressing gratitude. But you just hit, this is important. Dr. Jess, in his book about wisdom, he says, you want to get wise? Okay, here's what you do. You practice two things. One, gratitude, just what you're saying. And the other is compassion, and that includes self-compassion. But you got to practice them. Gratitude and compassion, and the compassion towards others, but also towards yourself. And you start doing that, and you'll get wise fast.
And here's a bonus. You also live a much better life. Your quality of life will improve. You'll feel happy. You'll be fulfilled. Unfortunately, I think what I'm seeing a lot in the world right now is this victimhood mentality, this culture of people feeling like they're oppressed, feeling like they're disadvantaged, when in reality, they probably lived a better life than anyone before. We've got these things in our hands now. The richest person on earth in the turn of the century, Rockefeller, did not have access to a streaming service to give him all the movies in the world. It could be argued that we have a better quality of life than pretty much the richest person in the 19th century. And yet we don't have that sense of gratitude to understand exactly where we are today. And I think that's rather depressing. That's my lesson, and unsurprisingly is from Andrew Tyndale, who I've always regarded as a great mentor of mine, who ultimately changed a lot of how I see the world today. On the flip side, is there a lesson that you've heard so far that you'd either disagree with it in terms of wisdom because you might not have experienced it in your life, or that you don't agree that it constitutes wisdom?
I'm going to combine that lesson that I didn't mention in the first round, combined with a lesson that perhaps I disagree with. And I say this, of course, with the greatest respect for the guest. It's more the combination. Brad Casper talked about leadership is not a title. One can lead from any position on the org chart or within any organization. I like that. I also heard the lesson from Alan Hazelden, who I really enjoyed. His first lesson learned was you need an org chart. Show people where they are and what their responsibilities are. And then subsequent conversation had to do with a matrix organization that was kind of like ridiculous. The lesson that was added to that by Alan was identify bad actors and weed them out. I like disruption. I like indeed individuals in organizations that don't fit the format, that go against that, but have something to contribute. And I think that is extremely important. So if I'm looking for a lesson that perhaps I disagree with, if I understand it correctly, what was mentioned, then I would say, forget the org chart. That's not what it's all about. And also identify bad actors and weed them out. That's a horrible way to work in an organization, to look for bad actors and weed them out. Maybe the boss is the bad actor and the boss should be weeded out. That's just my point, again, looking at lessons that perhaps I disagree with.
I'm not disagreeing with you, by the way, but it's a really, really big topic. And sometimes the boss is the bad actor, but we won't go down that road. We'll have that conversation another time. Look, I don't know if anybody's ever said this, but they've alluded to it. Some of our guests have alluded to these two points, and I want to bring them up. The first is treat other people the way you want to be treated. Now, we've been talking about cultural awareness in this show, on this show since we started. You can't treat other people the way you want to be treated unless you're from exactly the same cultural background. And even if you are, you might not share the same beliefs. So I think that's a dangerous thing to do. I don't think it's very wise. I think you treat people the way they want to be treated. And I think Matt Bai said something similar in his podcast, which is people make you feel the way they feel.
I disagree with that, by the way, but please continue.
Well, you can, but I have firsthand experience that treating people the way I want to be treated has caused nothing but pain in my life. The other thing is knowledge is power. I've heard this said, totally disagree with it, because knowledge is not power. Knowledge is data. Data is not power. The use of knowledge is power. And if you want to disagree with that, then you take a Google Analytics course and see how much data is available to you from a website, and then tell me you're all powerful, because you won't know what the hell's going on. You have to actually learn and use this data. So knowledge is not power. Use of knowledge is power.
I interviewed Don Peppers, a guy who's in the Marketing Hall of Fame, and he said something about bank favors. Now, he spoke about it at some length. I kind of take umbrage with that. I don't like people who bank favors. I don't like people who keep score and who keep accounting of favors. I think it's a Zen story where the rich guy goes to the Zen guru teacher and he gives him a big bag of gold. And he stands there and the Zen master looks up and says, yes, what is it? And he says, well, that's a bag of gold for you. And the Zen master says, yes. And he said, well, you know, it's a lot of money. People would have to work years to earn that much. And the Zen master says, so you want to be thanked. Is that it? And the rich guy said, well, you know, it's kind of customary. And the Zen master says, I thought the giver of the gift was the one who felt the gratitude. When you're doing favors for people, why are you doing it? Because you want to accrue some sort of positive balance, or it's because you want to help a person? Or are you doing it because it's the right thing for you to do, or the right thing to do? Or are you doing it for some subterfuge, engaging in some subterfuge for some future payoff? And so I kind of take umbrage with, I don't think Don meant that exactly, but hit that phrase, grated on me, I suppose. No need to bank favors, just do the favor or don't. You know, it really is that simple. At least it is for me.
I think Duff is on the right track there, in that the act of giving itself is what gives you ultimately that fulfillment, because that's what you derive that meaning from. The fact that you made someone's life better gives you that sense of fulfillment and purpose. And that is what will bring you, you know, ultimate joy. It's not in the return. It's not in getting something back. But for me, the lesson that really I still struggle is project certainty. And again, it might mean that I just have a real issue with people not telling the whole truth. Now, I would say that in the context of this pandemic that we're currently in, if people had just shared the damn information that we needed to know, we can make our own decisions. This idea that people are too dumb to make decisions for themselves if we give them all the information, it just does not sit well with me. Especially at the start of the pandemic, there were very important pieces of information which were suppressed that could have altered the entire course of how it played out. and potentially, I believe, the vaccine hesitancy as a result of the loss of credibility because of white lies that the authorities have told, for example, towards how effective the mask is. And so it's costing us in terms of our response now because they weren't able to give us the full picture at the beginning. I'm just really uncomfortable with the idea that people can't be told the full truth or be told the full information, because what that's telling us is that either we're incapable as people or that you will make the wrong decision with that information. And unfortunately, I think that is something that will breed authoritarianism. If we don't trust people's information, then we're ultimately doomed to repeat that disaster of an authoritarian regime.
I can't disagree with you, Jeff, but I will say that I have firsthand experience of being very transparent and it going awry with employees. Now, not to say that that experience has made me become more authoritarian or not continue to be transparent, but I see it from the other side as well. I have no opinion one way or another. I tend to lean towards just be transparent. Don't know though. Everything that we've heard today, or everything on this episode, is pretty clear that wisdom is something different to every one of us. Hence why we have an array of hosts. Hence why we have an array of guests to bring you all facets of wisdom from one corner of the globe to the other into your earbuds so you can decide for yourself what works for you, what stupid tax has been paid for you, what doesn't work, and you can ignore that.
That's beautiful. Thanks for that, Rob. And on that note, this is why we're having this discussion. Now, to our listeners, if you have somebody that you'd like to hear from, please tell us who that is. If you have questions that you'd like to be answered, let us know. What sort of wisdom you want to hear, please email us on podcast@10lessonslearned.com. That's podcast@10lessonslearned.com.
Also, hit that like, leave us a comment, and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss another episode.
This is the only podcast on the internet that brings you wisdom lesson by lesson.
All over the world. Never underestimate. We are on different continents talking to people around us, but also across borders. So no limit. And, you know, to use Socrates, we are all citizens of the world.
I love that. You've been listening to the international podcast of 10 Lessons That Took Me 50 Years to Learn, produced by Robert Hossery and sponsored by the Professional Development Forum. PDF provides webinars, social media discussions, podcast networking events, etc. For more information, please visit www.professionaldevelopmentforum.org. Oh, and did I mention it's all free? Thank you for listening and stay safe, everybody.